IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
I recently had the privilege of attending a workshop held by the Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute to discover and develop leadership. The workshop was given by Professor Mark Rittenberg, Distinguished Teaching Fellow, Haas School of Business, University of California at Berkeley, and Ingrid Gavshon, Continuing Lecturer, Haas School of Business and the Fung Institute of Engineering Leadership. They are partners at Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute, and they co-ran the course. Professor Rittenberg and Ingrid, thank you so much for joining me. As I mentioned, we did this workshop course for leadership. And straight after that course, I met up with two friends who were in the same industry, different organizations, and both of them were whinging about their jobs, their bosses. What is it that we lack in leadership today, and what needs to be changed?
Great question. Wonderful. And I'm going to give a short answer and let Ingrid come in also. What's lacking worldwide, not just in South Africa, but worldwide, are authentic leaders. Authentic leaders, and we can describe them. And also there's a wonderful article in Harvard Business Review by Bill George and Peter Sims, which describes the authentic leader. The authentic leader is a trust builder. They're a people person. They share their leadership stories as lessons for other people. They empower other people. They care deeply about the people who report to them. They care deeply about the workforce. And so what I see all too often, and I hear it in America as much as I hear it here, I'm working in a toxic workplace. Toxic workplace, poison. And what that means is lack of empathy, lack of compassion. Like people say, I don't feel seen, I don't feel heard, I don't feel recognized, I'd love to make a contribution. And what they mean by that is, I don't feel seen, I feel like I'm invisible, it doesn't matter if I'm there or not. I don't feel heard, I come up with ideas and I suddenly see a couple people rolling their eyes, and it's actually quite a good idea. I don't feel recognized, where's the thank you, where's the appreciation for the extra work one's doing, or maybe they come in early on a, you know, weekday morning or even on a weekend because there's some deadline. And I'd like to make a contribution. I'd like to have a ringside seat as to what we're actually doing. And I have wisdom and skills to contribute. But because this is your title, I'm often not invited to those kinds of things. So that's what people are talking about. And I hear it more often than not. I don't like my workplace. My leader is invisible. We have a military term in the U.S. My leader, male or female, it doesn't matter, by the way, is AWOL, absent without leave. I haven't seen them in months. And people want guidance to, in fact, move their careers forward and are depending on the leader to help them do that. All too often, the person's absolutely just absent without leave.
Ingrid, would you like to add anything to that?
So I think today people are lacking connection. People need to be build bridges to learn about other people, other people's points of view, the ability to hear one another and to listen and really listen for possibility, not listen to wait to speak and to jump in, but actually hear another person. And maybe their views are different, or maybe they come from a different background from us, but actually there's so much commonality in the world and there's so much pain in the world at the moment. And it's, if we could just hear each other, we could make the world a better place.
One of the things that came up when I was listening to my two friends chat was if I could put myself in the leader's position, both of the leaders have to meet kind of like a set goal, be it financial, be it leadership, be it whatever. And the pressure on those leaders to perform also seemed a little bit unreasonable. And all that I was getting is the leadership frustration just filtering its way down to kind of the floor level. And I wonder if you'd like to comment on the stress and strain of leaders.
Sure. They're under tremendous pressure. You're absolutely right. And the pressure to perform, the pressure to hit targets, the pressure to hit their numbers. But if you look at all the studies that have been done, when you develop the workplace culture to be a positive culture, positive workplace culture, we often call it a coaching culture, where we're all coaches for each other, where everybody has someone to talk to, everyone's supporting everybody, no one is, competing per se. You will find that the results at the end of the day are actually more positive and higher accomplishment and higher input than the places where people just come to work and go home and try to figure out how to take a one day public holiday and turn it into eight. To me, that's the absolute signal that I don't want to be there. And let me see if I can use my brain to find a way to be absent from work as much as possible because I don't really like it. And what we're saying is that one can create, regardless of the industry, a positive workplace culture, which another word for it is a positive community, a community where we're actually there for each other, where we're there for good times and bad times, where we actually support each other, where we actually connect on a level of human connection. So every study will prove that better results are achieved through companies that have leaders who, in fact, bring in the human skills and the human factor, empathy and compassion.
And this is what you are here in South Africa doing. You are training leaders to show that empathy and compassion. How did that go? What was your experience?
Well, this isn't my first rodeo in South Africa. I've been here for years coming. I mean, I worked in the old days with Anglo and with De Beers and SM Goldstein and Ball Reefs. And the project I'm the most proud of is the AVIS project in 2004. And I met the CEO, Grenville Wilson, an amazing guy, who had a vision that customer service needed to be on a different level than all the other car hire places. And so we met, and he said, I want to put 2,800 people through intensive culture change work, and I will be present at all the workshops, and I want to be very, very serious about this. So for 5 years, we actually did an Avis project where we transformed the company from a regular car hire company to one where people were communicating, were being absolutely standing up for each other, partnering, helping each other out in their, place, these kinds of things. And they ultimately became the number one company, overtaking at that time, a while ago, Budget and Hertz, because the level of communication, the level of kindness, compassion was so radically changed that service was just their middle name.
I remember that transformation. Ingrid, you spoke earlier about listening, truly listening, and connectivity. Do you think that in our modern age of technology that we are disconnected from each other? Or do you think that it's irrespective of technology we're disconnected?
I think that today the technology has made it harder for people to communicate. When you communicate via text or via your phone and you're not actually speaking to one another, it's very easy to miscommunicate. You put something out and you don't know whether it's going to land. You think you've written a lovely, passionate, empathetic email or message to somebody, but they read it as something that's more toxic or something that's more accusatory. So what we say is that you need to have conversations. You need to talk to one another, to really hear one another. We spoke at that workshop about the four principles of Dr. Angelus Arian, and one of them is tell the truth without blame or judgment. And we believe that if you can tell people their truth. We don't believe in radical honesty, but we do believe in you start off with the good. There's always something redeeming, something good to tell somebody. And then you tell somebody, well, this needs work or this needs to change. You don't say, you did bad. They'll beat themselves up better than you can. And then you say, and this is what we can do about it. So you isolate what the incident is or the problem is rather than globalizing it. And I think that if people did start to speak to one another more, I think the people, there'd be less lonely people in the world. I think people are very siloed. A lot of the companies we work in America and in Europe and in Asia, people are siloed. They don't talk to one another. They talk about Gen Z is going to be, you know, this foreign generation that they don't understand. And then when you say, well, have you spoken to them about their hopes and dreams? They come quite taken aback. And they do so, and they like, oh, they also want to climb the corporate ladder. They also want to be able to buy a house, an apartment, a car, whatever it might be. And so it's about how you find the commonality. And this is a lot about the work that we do, is helping people find the commonality and finding their good, their humanity.
What hooked me for your course and what for me also elevated it is the notion of storytelling. And that is what I believe makes us human. We sit around the campfire from day dot and we tell stories. What do you see that role of storytelling? And do you think it can be a one size fits all, because essentially that's what connects us?
Is that a question for me or for us?
Go for it. Whoever would like it.
I'll give a short answer, Ingrid will too. Purpose of storytelling. The only reason one uses storytelling in an organization or corporation is because lessons learned. So I tell a story I tell a short story about a homeless man at the beginning of COVID, and I look in my wallet, I'm going to the cinema, and I look in my wallet and I have only a $20 bill, and I think it's a cold night. What's the difference? I'm going to give him 20. And I go walk over and I give him, I said, $20 bill, said, sir, please go buy yourself a hot meal. He looked at me with the most amazing blue eyes and said, you know what? I'm actually fine right now. I'm actually fine. But you see the man across the street near the cinema? I said, yes. I don't think he's eaten in 3 days. Could you take that over to him? And it was just like such a learning for me, in terms of, I just thought everybody that was homeless would take whatever you gave them. But actually, there's a community in the homeless also. And so my lesson was, stop judging a book by its cover. Stop thinking that people are this way. Stop thinking the homeless are this way. Stop thinking that bankers are this way. Like you said, one size doesn't fit all. And that when we tell our leadership stories, of which that's one of my many leadership stories, it's a lesson for everybody else. And the lesson learned is the purpose of storytelling. And we can all learn the lessons of whether it's a lesson about being kinder or more compassionate or less judgmental. And again, most of us have between 50 and 60 events and moments that have made us the leaders who we are. So that's my definition of storytelling. We use a lot of it in our workshop.
Ingrid?
You know, I absolutely agree with Mark. And I feel that I come up out of the filmmaking tradition, where it was all about the stories and about finding out what the story underneath is. And you meet people and you form a certain opinion. And once you know their story, you reconsider and think, wow, there's commonality in this experience that this person had. Or this is so different from my world, but now I understand why the person is the person they are today and why they're doing what they're doing or making decisions they're doing. And I think if more people in companies if the senior leadership shared more of their leadership stories of triumph and of pain or of difficulties that they faced, people would see them as human rather than as this mask that arrives at work. We do a lot of work with engineers and scientists and people in the tech world and biotech and hospitals. And when we do this work and we do that storytelling exercise you did, people are amazed. They say, I worked alongside this person for 10 or 15 or 20 years, and I had no idea this was their story. I had no idea that they were adopted, or I had no idea that they grew up in a different country and were immigrants to this country, or I had no idea that we had some commonality of experience. I feel that by sharing one's stories, one finds out more about somebody and you'll remember it better. I teach a lot of engineers at the engineering school, and they are always surprised because they want to go to VCs and pitch their ideas and get lots of money for their ideas. And they come with so much detail and these pie charts and these very complicated slides. And I say, refine it down. You're talking to a non-technical audience. What is the story? What is the dream that you want to impart? And once people get it and they understand the dream, then it's so much easier to persuade people that what you want to do is going to make a difference. So I believe in the power of storytelling.
I'm also actually writing a book called Leadership is Love, The Power of Human Connection. And the first part is stories of human connection, really, really positive. But the second part is actually the heartbreak of human connection. When I've disappointed you, when I've actually maybe someone betrayed someone. And I feel that people see themselves in other people's stories. It suddenly the story becomes universal. If it's a story about mother and father and family. We all have families, and people suddenly identify very, very much with the story that's actually being told. And Ingrid's right. The lessons learned, where there are always lessons from the stories that we choose, last forever. People can actually learn something and remember the story, for years after it was told.
You talk about stories. Everybody has their own unique story. We are all completely different. You talk about also the universality of the stories, because at the end of the day, we're all part of a bigger community or a smaller community. And has you ever heard anything that has shocked you? Are essentially all stories the same?
I'll let Ingrid take that one.
I have heard amazing stories of triumph over adversity. I've heard stories of great joy and then great loss. I have heard stories of, I don't know if you would like an example. We did a workshop with a group of people at a very famous West Coast company, and there was this young man, he was about 17 or 18. He was a trainee and had just left school. He told this very painful story of when his cousin committed suicide and how he was the person on the scene and had to step in. And that really shocked me, that this young person who seemed so joyous and buoyant and upbeat had this really tough situation that they'd been through a couple of years before. And I think that everybody has got a story. Everybody's got good stories and positive stories, and everybody's got stories of struggles, of wishes unfulfilled or needs unfulfilled, or coming from a very poor background, especially here in South Africa, when we bring MBA students every year for a week's immersion in business. And I tell them before they come, you're going to see people who are dressed in, they could be in Paris or London, certainly not Berkeley. Berkeley people don't dress up. But you're going to see these people and you're going to think they've been born with a silver spoon in their mouth and they're born to money. And then when you ask the people their stories, that they had to go to school every day from on the farm and they had to walk 10 miles every day to school without shoes. Or they had to go, they lived in a township and they had to use, one latrine for the whole street. But you see them now and they're flying around the world and have done extremely well. And it's usually that there's one person in their life that saw potential, whether it's their granny or their parents or a teacher that
Priest.
saw potential.
Yeah.
We have had students from Asia that came to South Africa, and they say, I see the kind of life that some of the people are living, that we take people to townships, to Guguletu, we take people to Soweto and Alex. And they say, I see people living the same kind of conditions that we lived in. I grew up with no money, but I had a teacher who saw that I could do maths. And that's why I'm an engineer in a famous Silicon Valley company today. So I think it's, do they shock me? Sometimes. Do they surprise me? Yes. And I encourage people to tell their leadership stories, because telling your leadership story helps other people understand you and follow you. And you'll follow a leader whose story you understand and if they're honest and transparent, as opposed to, as I said earlier, sort of coming to work with this mask every day.
I also had sorry, Charisse, a student who was in my class, and it was 10 to 5, and I said, let's work next week. He said, I got to tell my story now. Please, professor, can I tell my story? I said, sure. So he gets up and he says, next Tuesday is a very important day. It will mark the 25th anniversary that my father walked out on our family. We're all sitting there absolutely in shock. He said, I had to quit school and help my mom. I had to help support the family. And then finally, I didn't have a profession, really. And I looked at the newspaper and it said, Wanted Big Brothers. Well, who's going to want me? I don't even have a high school degree. And it turned out that the Big Brother director said, I think you're perfect. You've actually been through your own struggle. You can help our guys. And the next slide he showed was this beautiful kid, 14 years of age, said, I'm his big brother. I'm earning money to send him to school. I'm already saving for his college education. And how many of you are willing to be big brothers and big sisters? Because there are a lot of kids out there who need a lot of guidance. And I couldn't believe out of the 27 people, like 14 hands went up. And they all became big brothers and big sisters. And I checked a year later, and 12 of them were still big brothers and big sisters. So very often the story is a call to action, to actually help people see that there are people less fortunate than they are, and we can all do our part to throw our hat in the ring and make a better world.
That's very inspirational. There's something I would like to comment on in terms of the program that I attended, the workshop I attended, and that is I found very positive energy from the second I arrived. And by the end of the session, everybody wanted to be on a group, the same group. It created, and I knew not one person when I walked in there. There was a sense of positiveness and positive energy. Is that created by it, or does that happen by chance, by luck, by luck?
Creating community is part of our pedagogy. And the South African team that I trained 15, 20 years ago are absolutely trained to come into the room and let's celebrate what's good. We can all complain. We can all say, ain't it awful? But there's something to always feel good about and let's feel hope. So there's a positive energy that one is actually creating and also taking away the idea, if you don't feel comfortable doing this exercise, that's totally fine. We're not going to force you. No one's forced, and everybody did the exercise. So once you take away the barrier in that way, and I have to tell you, every time, whether it's Bangkok, San Francisco, Riyadh, Dubai, Johannesburg, every time, it's what Mandela spoke about, the triumph of the human spirit. The triumph of the human spirit rises to create a beautiful synergy among human beings in the spirit of community. That's what you felt.
It was fantastic because it's not often, sometimes you go into a public forum and you feel a little bit self-conscious, or you feel there's a weird energy, and that didn't happen at all. Who is your course for, and who can apply, and how do you do so?
Okay, it's first of all for everyone that what we're really it can be for senior leaders if that's the group. It can also be for middle management. But our agenda in South Africa and in America is culture change. Culture change, which is, everybody goes through some kind of training, whether it's one day, 2 days, 3 days. And the idea that we create a better culture with values and ethics that we live on a daily basis. So we're very interested in companies that have leaders that say, you know what? The culture isn't strong enough. The culture isn't kind enough. The culture isn't focused enough on customer service. And let's actually create a whole new spirit of the workplace and customer service, and let's really treat our customers in a very, very, very positive way. And again, it happens every time. We were working once with a cement factory in Pretoria, and it was like, this god-awful place. And we worked with them for, a few years, and suddenly they were in competition for company of the year. And that was profitability, employee engagement, and customer service. And for the first time, they were under-promising and over-delivering. Suddenly, they were delivering before the deadline. And that all had to do with working with the people, honoring the people, celebrating the people. Human beings are amazing. And if you treat them the right way, they will create magic in their lives and in their work lives.
English. How would one apply?
You can either contact me, or I can send you some details of people that they can contact in South Africa directly. We're going to have an open enrollment 2-day Discovering Your Authentic Leadership workshop, which will be about leadership communications, storytelling, and coaching, and then ending with leader as visionary. And that's going to be on the 29th and 30th of October in Johannesburg. And I will be very happy to send you details of the venue and the costs and everything else when we do it. Otherwise, if people are interested in knowing more, they can contact me, ingrid.gavshon, GAVSHON, at gmail.com. And I'm happy to send information about the courses we do. So we do a lot of leadership courses all over the world. As Mark said, we've done stuff as far away as Mongolia. And we've done work in South Africa, Asia, Europe, and America. And we have a basic core of the courses, but we also listen to what the people want and what is their pain point. We don't come and say, this is off the shelf and go do this. We say, tell us about what you want and what do you want to achieve. And if we can't help you, we'll tell you. But if we can help you, we'll co-design something with you to fit what you need rather than what we think you need. We don't prescribe.
And I can really endorse the course just from the short taste of it that I had, that you both, Ingrid and Prof, practice what you preach. You do not lecture, you tell stories, and you have a really good time. And it's really a fantastic way to learn. So thank you for including me, and also thank you so much for joining me.
Very kind of you, and we thank you so much for your kind words.
That was Professor Mark Rittenberg and Ingrid Gershon, and they are running the Berkeley Executive Coaching course through their institute.